And welcome to AFL Tonight. This is ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. My name is Tim Capper, along with the waterlogged Jim Robinson. Hey, dude, it's better than being a lightning rod, right? Because, you know, before
the lightning
came to the show, I've heard every damn thing.
Yeah, the lightning has seemed to calm down quite a bit.
But, you know, if I happen to revert back or need to revert back to last week's episode, just to remind everybody, Florida. That's all I got to say. Florida. What is it about news that comes out of Florida that's so weird, dude? I don't know what it is. Some weird stuff, man.
There's something every day. Some kid got arrested down near, what was it, Palm Beach, a little town just north of it. Florida State student. He was a fraternity kid. Killed two random people, and when the police showed up, he was gnawing on their face of one of the people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a lovely way to start off a podcast, now, isn't it? Honey, I just love your eyes. Yes.
With a fine Chianti and some fava beans.
Yeah, Betty Davis eyes. I love your eyes. Okay, anyways, we now know who are going to be the two combatants in Arena Bowl 29. And the way we got there, basically one team has followed suit currently for the playoffs, and I guess for most of the regular season, and the other one, they follow the same route too. So I think we're going to first start with the Arizona Rattlers. I mean, what they have done in this playoffs, Jim, has been absolutely it's nutballs. So far through two games, where they're averaging 84 points scored, which would shatter a playoff record. Because I know
two and a half points a game.
Yeah, our former colleague Adam Markowitz wrote a very interesting article on the league website, as he has for the past couple of weeks. Over on the league website and talking about stats and stuff like that, and it's inside the numbers. Yeah, inside the numbers. Yeah, it's just mind-boggling what Arizona has done, and what can be done with Nick Davila coming up and whatnot. But going into this game, we saw what the line was supposed to be, and a raucous crowd at the arena in Arizona.
Very good crowd.
Yeah. It's just, what did they do? They tied the league record and their record from last week for most points in the second quarter. They scored, was it 40?
No, they came 1 point short for the second quarter. They tied that record last week with 35. This week.
Oh, that's right. 35. They scored 34. That's right.
Because you corrected me on that.
Yes.
And because I had forgot the previous week. Yeah. And they had scored the most points.
As did I. See? What comes around goes around.
Yeah. They scored the most points in the first half. And they actually had the opportunity to score the most points of any half, the record being 50 scored in the second half of the game. So they are on a road of pure domination right now.
Yes, and I think we were doing the math. I think this might. I hope I don't. I'm not stepping on Adam's toes. I think he was looking to find out if Arizona was the only team in playoff history to go not be behind during the playoffs.
To not trail.
Because I know we were checking up on the 1999 Albany Firebirds, and they did. They were actually behind 7-0 to the Grand Rapids Rampage in the quarters.
I think the Detroit Drive might have just off the top of my head. That's a good question. I'd have to dig. It would take me a couple of minutes. I'm not going to do that now.
No, I think Adam's doing that. Watch for his articles coming out on the league homepage, and I know we will promote them also through our.
No, you know what? Here it is. Only three teams have ever gone wire to wire, and this is courtesy of Adam Markowitz, NFL guru, without trailing in the playoffs. 87 Denver, one playoff game.
Okay. Yeah. 88
Detroit, two playoff games. 1990 Detroit, two playoff games. The one team that we thought at the time might have been it was Albany. However, Albany's game in 1999 against the Grand Rapids Rampage, the Rampage opened the game up 7-0.
Right, Right. Isn't that what I just said?
But there's the other three. So they have a chance, and it would be more significant being three games than obviously one and two.
Yeah. And we didn't have the three games in the playoffs till the NBC era, if I remember correctly. Is that fair?
Say that?
I think so. I have to go back and check. I mean, when you start getting 8, 6, 17, 18, 19 teams, yes, you think so. But either way, Arizona,
not even that. Just their plus minus, their turnover ratio. 2 weeks in a row, they tied the league record for most turnovers collected in a playoff game seven.
It was seven, yeah.
Yeah. And so just the mere fact that they did it back-to-back and it had only been done once before, that's 2 weeks in a row. That's a league record. And they were plus five in each of those games. That puts them plus 10 in the past two games. That's, yeah. I mean, you might, people will say, well, look at who they played. Okay, I understand that. But still, that's just pure and utter domination.
It was. This wasn't the Cleveland team from week 16. Thank God. They did put up a little bit of a fight. I mean, it was 14-0 at one point for Arizona, and then the closest that it was 14-7.
Well, I thought the broadcast, I thought they did a good job of explaining, hey, listen, we talked to both these coaches before the game. Do we expect a reoccurrence? And then both coaches said, no, every game's different. And then kind of going a little deeper into how Cleveland had done that West Coast swing, mm-hmm. and they didn't expect to take the toll that they did get staying out and away from home that long. And I thought that kind of set up well, especially when you saw the start of the game. It wasn't a quick bludgeoning. it ended up being one, but nonetheless, it didn't start off as a quick bludgeon.
No, it didn't.
Start to think, okay, we might actually have a contest here.
And what's funny is considering that all the records that Nick Davila could break, if he had stayed in the entire time, the past 2 weeks, he may have already passed it. It's possible.
Yeah, and if you think about it, their first drive in each game when he came out of the game, there was an interception thrown each game.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, that's less points that he would have put on the board probably, and their plus minus would have been off the charts at that point. I mean, can you think about being legitimately a plus 12 in two games? That's insane.
Yeah.
There are teams that haven't done that for seasons, and they've accomplished plus 10 in two games.
It was so well balanced for the Arizona receiving core. Anthony Amos, Maurice Purifoy, and Rod Windsor each had three touchdowns. Rod Windsor really was the one who took advantage of his catches to touchdowns. I mean, it's, you know, six receptions, three touchdowns, but I mean, monster.
The guy that got caught the most balls was Anthony Amos.
Yeah,
you know, who would have thought that?
Now, what happened with Cleveland? Dominant most of the year at wide receiver for the Cleveland Gladiators, so I'll say Cavaliers, Gladiators, and got on one of the All-Arena teams was Colin Taylor.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure if he'd make All-Arena, to be honest. He was in that battle with maybe three or four receivers for that last spot.
Right, and we'll talk about that.
Which
we'll talk about. But what do you – I mean, it's Colin Taylor was – I was it the past two or three games that Colin Taylor has just been – non-existent, but mind you, Quentin Sims stepped up 1 week. I think he was hurt one other. Larry Beaver stepped up, I think, 1 week. Is it just a matter of too few, too late, if you know what I mean? I know it's usually too little, too late, but...
You know, I think there's a couple things that led to this game finishing the way it did. I don't think Arvell Nelson finished this end of the season strongly.
No, under 500 for under 50% for passing.
Yeah, I'm on record as saying is if there was a most improved player of the year award, he definitely earned it, and I firmly believe that. But the last 2 weeks of the season, that just doesn't seem to be the case. But I don't want to put it just all on him. You know, their offensive line, they had an offensive lineman earn All-Arena honors, and their offensive line started to struggle at the end of the year. Their defense did not get pressure with their front four like They could have. They had two good, really good defensive backs. One named Defensive Rookie of the Year, and the other one could have been, if he had played the whole season, All Arena, probably first team, named Joe Powell. They just didn't step up. They didn't play to the best of their capabilities, and give Arizona a lot of credit as well. They struggled early in the season, and when they kind of hit a rough patch, losing some games, they, with injuries and in their depth, those guys are healed up now. Mm-hmm. They're healed up to the point now where the inactive player for this game was Cliff Dukes, the 2011 Defensive Player of the Year. Yes. They had him inactive to play the other guys. So that kind of tells you a little bit about their depth and their ability to get pressure and put Arvell Nelson into spots and positions in which he threw poor balls, and they took advantage of it with quite a few interceptions.
Yeah. You know, Arizona has now won 9 straight, including 7 to finish off the regular season, and they do, with their win, they become the host at Gila River Arena, which I was corrected on.
You were corrected on it, and while we're talking about corrections, yes. I should say, we were talking about Cleveland here. I totally screwed up last week in describing the scenario in which Coach – we discussed Coach Tom messing up the final minute. To this moment – I don't know what game I was thinking of. I totally got that wrong.
You had the right idea. I think it was just the wrong team and wrong quarter.
Yeah, basically all the facts were wrong, but the idea was still right. The idea that sometimes coaches call and tell the players what to do and put them in the position to make the right decision, and they get caught up in the moment of the game, and sometimes they blow it. Well, in this instance, unless the way the game actually played out, that doesn't seem to be the case. So I was completely wrong.
Okay, well, you know, we want the fans to call us out on this. If we make a mistake, let us know. That's the main thing. And I guess for once, you know what? It's like, and I guess is Gila always pronounced that way?
Gila?
Yeah. You know, when you say a Gila monster, it's not a Gila monster. Is it a Gila monster?
You know, actually, when you said that last week, I thought about that. I was like, yeah, I think Tim said that wrong, but I didn't say
Well,
you
it's
know,
like saying, it's like having one of the Greek sandwiches, gyro.
Gyro.
Yeah, it's called a gyro. Exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm using as my example. So.
Well, you're Canadian. We'll forgive you.
Oh, shush. the second game of the week, which depending on who you talk to, it was either an amazingly played game or was a severely sloppy game. Philadelphia and Jacksonville, this game really had everything in it. It really did.
I'm leaning more towards sloppy.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. What I really liked is, what Cedric Bonner said about the game. He was talking about the matchup, and he was saying, this is a game, you know, I got to pick, I'm going to say Philly, but this is a game Jacksonville really could win and really probably should win. They had the talent to do it. They just haven't shown the ability to put 4 solid quarters together consistently throughout the season.
Right.
And,
this is the team that has scored in how many 100-plus games?
Yeah, it kind of held true. I mean, it was a sloppy game from turnovers to interceptions to special teams plays to timeout, the misuse of timeouts and decision making. I don't think it was a clean and crisp game. I can see where watching it, you say, oh, it's fun. You know, it came down to the final minute and that's exciting. Totally get that and understand that.
Well, the fourth quarter was amazing. The fourth, I think that's probably maybe that's the thing that stands out the most to me was the fourth quarter, and maybe that's what kind of skewed, because I was leaning towards it was an exciting game rather than sloppy. I guess I was, you know, I'm a little skewed because of that, but
Well, I think that's what makes a game like that great is you people get to watch and they have different takes on it. And
well, it's like last week's game. It's like last week's game, and you know, and how Adam Markowitz wrote on one of our on one of his articles for us is that, you know, that the
greatest ever.
You know, Jacksonville Orlando was one of the best games ever, which I don't really agree. I didn't really agree with.
I mean, either. I put it up there amongst maybe 10 games, but that's the point. Like, that's the great thing about sports. And to diverge a little bit, we're currently in the midst of the Olympics. And the great thing about sports and the Olympics is you kind of put things aside and the focus and the discussion changes a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so it allows you to have these type of fun debates and arguments and back and forth. And I think that's a positive thing.
Now, one of the things that we saw that stood out, obviously, which made the Sports Center, I think it was the number one play of the day, was the catch by Money Reynolds four seconds left in the fourth quarter.
That was quite the catch there.
That it was money. I mean, I guess he's –
And particularly with what's on the line, you know, that becomes an, I think, automatic contender – for catch of the year.
Yeah, Darius is making his he's making his mark. But it you know, it's true the game did not start off well. I mean, it was a pick six by David Hyland. Usually if that starts, you're thinking, uh-oh. You know, it's how you start off. I'm sure true that that Dan Reinebaugh would say that he started off sloppy. I mean, when you throw a pick six, you know, 52 seconds into the game,
I think that's one of the well, and we won't do picks this week. We'll do picks next week.
That's right.
Leading up to the Arena Bowl.
That's right.
But I think that's one of the concerns people have is, despite Philly winning and moving through the playoffs, Dan hasn't played his best ball as
he hasn't. No,
and so you know, there's two schools of thought. Is you know what you've done shows me what you do in the future, and the flip side is we know Dan is a great quarterback and he's been at the top of the league, he's been at the pinnacle of the league, and that he can get there. So that's the converse of that is, well, if he has that game, he can lead them to the promised land.
Right, right. I mean, over.
That's all for next week. That's all for next week.
Yeah. Overall, I mean, yeah, just why look at where our schedule is going to go for next week is that the Arena Fan crew will be arriving in Phoenix on Wednesday. Less obviously, except for Jim, unfortunately. And we are planning to do quite a bit of stuff, whether it be when it comes to media day. We're trying to get some interviews. We are going to do a whole bunch of stuff and we're going to try to do our next show next Thursday. It's going to be a day later than normal, but just because of the schedule that with everybody flying and whatnot. But we'll still have it available. But anyways, to continue. Sorry, got a little bit off topic there. Is it fair to say? Based on what happened in the fourth quarter, because I know there was a lot of controversy, so to speak, on how Sharks coach Bob Lanzi handled the last minute and a half, 2 minutes
really
of that game.
You really going to ask me about the end of a fourth quarter again after what I did last week?
I have to. because arena, you know, arena ball should be. Usually it will come down to you want to come down to the last plays of the game, last play of the game, who's going to win, whoever has the ball last.
Okay, no, you're right. I was trying to poke fun.
But what do you?
I think.
I mean, for anybody who didn't miss it, can you give a quick synopsis of what happened? What did coach do?
Well, just very generically. Without going through a play by play, he.
No. I want you to read the league play by play.
I can pull that up and read it. Typically, in a tight game like this, you want to be able to have your three timeouts at the end of that last minute, and to position yourself because of the craziness of that last minute and you know how things can go with missed extra points, onside kicks. Gaining or going down possessions, and prior to that, to me, that was the biggest mistake was the use of losing, I shouldn't say the use of a timeout.
Yeah, but they lost it on a challenge.
Yeah, yes, losing on the challenge. And in his mind, I would have think that he was making the right call. Now, this I think is the issue, is that he's not been coaching this entire season or even last season. And I think a more seasoned in that situation coach would know, I need to think about my camera angles here and what's available. And that's something that coaches do think about. Yes, I might like to challenge this, but do we really think we have the camera angle to benefit us in this challenge? In this situation, I think if he had more experience throughout the season or even been last season, he would know that camera angle probably wasn't there, and thus the I don't fault him for challenging, but the process of how it works, the end result, what he wanted, the odds were minuscule.
Okay. Now,
and so that has to enter into the equation, and I don't know if it did for him. I didn't talk to him, so I don't know, but I would assume that part of the equation wasn't there for him, and when he took that red flag and threw it, but it has to be. It has to be part of your coach's equation, because everybody knows there isn't a camera on the goal line. There isn't, you know, there are just certain situations, and if you're a coach that doesn't look at that, shame on you. Shame on you. You have to be aware of this stuff.
I would hope that, and maybe, you know, as it, there isn't one on there on the goal line yet.
We could talk about that, you know, ad nauseum.
I know. And I thought of I've thought of some ideas that would make it better, but
it's not there.
No.
And only that, you have to understand as a coach what is available for them to review. There have been games this season where the home team's video production crew has an angle that clearly shows something did or did not occur, but that's not usable in certain situations because maybe it's a TV game, so they have to use the TV cameras, which did not pick up on that. And we've seen situations throughout the year in which we as fans watching, whether it was on the ESPN3 broadcast or even live, and you see a shot on the Jumbotron.
I thought it was Univision that occurred specifically.
Yeah, where you see this is clearly wrong.
Or local TV. Yeah.
Yeah, or the coach that challenged should win this challenge, whether right or wrong.
Right.
As far as the call goes, and. But you need to know that as a coach.
Right, and I understand where you're coming from, but I'm actually going to completely disagree with you on what you said about Coach Lanzi. I don't think it really matters that he was only a coach for two games this year, a head coach. He was a coach for the rest of the year, okay? So he should know his camera angles. And, you know, same thing as – so what last year? But remember, Jim, he was a head coach in the AFL, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, he was.
And replay existed back then. Remember, he brought this team – it's Milwaukee Iron team.
Yeah.
Through the playoffs, got to the semifinal and lost to Spokane. So
no, that's fair enough. I get that.
He's been around the AFL and to know long enough. He's been around since replay has been implemented in every regular season game.
Yeah, but this is more a nuanced thing in
until there is
you make
actually
mistakes and you learn, and I don't think he had the opportunity to make this mistake and learn from it. I'm a big believer in people make mistakes, and when the first mistake happens, let's try to be forgiving about that first mistake. But you made the mistake, you should learn from it and go on from there. And so that I guess that's maybe my angle or take on that is.
Okay, but then
I agree with what you're saying. Though you're right, he was on staff with Jacksonville. He's been there and seen Moss make those challenges, and he should be aware of what's available and what's not available.
He was a head coach in Milwaukee. He knew. Anyways, but so then it leads to this lost timeout leads to them having obviously having two instead of three, and then it comes down to a matter of fact of does he want to kick it deep, and this is late in the fourth.
Yeah, up by one.
After Joe Hill scored his 12-yard touchdown, I think.
Yeah, to put them up by one with 55 seconds to go.
Yeah.
And
deep or do you onside?
Well, in that situation, is they need a field goal to win. Now, I can hear everyone laughing, especially after we look at field goal statistics this season and all the funky things that have happened with field goals this season, Orlando, Los Angeles, some of the other misses, returns for touchdowns, etc. I agree with the decision to keep it long there. If you are really going to force them to win it by the field goal,
right?
You kick it long, and then you apply the defensive pressure. You get beat, but you get the ball back with time to go.
Right, and this goes back to, by the way, talking about field goals, this goes back to where Philadelphia, earlier in the fourth quarter, passed up an attempt at a field goal.
I know.
Ahead.
That kind of – and I can see how that would put something more into the equation. But okay, let's flip it and look at the other scenario. And you got to remember, these guys are making these decisions in real time where we get to sit here and debate about it and then flip the script and say, what about this situation? But we're going to flip the script and talk about this situation. What if he does it onside? 55 seconds left. He's got two timeouts. If he does it, he really needs to make sure it's an onside kick that if he doesn't get, doesn't go significantly past 10 yards. Because you don't want Philly to have an opportunity to get a first down if they need to kind of reset things.
Right. But also –
offensively.
What about the option of the unofficial let them score rule, score play? You know, they're going to be that – if they're going to be that close, depending on where they would be, you know, if you think about it, this way.
Yeah.
Okay. You know how – you know, everybody tries to squib it as best as possible, okay, and get the best – onside kick possible. Now, here's one option. You're that late in the game, and yes, all the team needs to do is to basically go forward, right? Because they would.
So what you're suggesting is, regardless if it's a long kickoff or an onsides kick, let the guy bring it in for a score and let's get the ball back.
Right, but I think another variable that may be used or could be used, and maybe those who look at how you know, head coaches look at the clock and stuff like that and manage the clock at the end of the game. How about this? Sure. Still onside the kick, right, Jim?
Okay.
But A, do one of two things. Make sure it is touched before 10 yards, because if that's the case.
Well,
think about it for a second. If you squib the kick, goes 10 yards and you don't recover, it puts the team, let's say, on the 15, okay? They have a chance to go forward, move forward a couple of times, get you to call your timeouts, etc., right?
Yeah.
But if you onside this kick and you squib it, say either A, into the wall, B, don't make sure it doesn't go 10 yards, okay? Or C, illegally touch it so it doesn't go 10 yards, you have given them you've given them less yardage to try to move forward. Because if you're able to get them to put the ball in the 5, after this quote unquote onside kick, there should be more options for them to be able
to. Here's the issue with that, Tim. Mm. Okay, they're kicking off at 55 seconds. If they do that kick into the wall, the squib kick, touch it before the 10, whatever it is to make it so Philly doesn't get a first down, you're going to have a couple ticks off. And when you start to look at the play clock and how many timeouts.
But remember the clock does not start until the ball is touched.
I know. And then you do the little squib. A couple seconds are going to come off.
Even if
it's a cruddy little meandering ball that.
That's what I'm saying. Touch it first. Then no time will come off the clock.
You're still. Okay. Regardless.
Let me ask
you a question. How much time is on the play clock, Tim?
Was it 30 seconds?
Okay. Say we bring.
Am I right?
Say we bring 55 seconds down. Say you're right. We only take 1 second off. It's 54. Uh-huh. At 30 seconds, 35.
Yeah.
And you have two timeouts.
Right.
And the offense has four downs.
But they're at the 5, as an example. You can only go forward so much. Remember, you're still losing.
No. Jacksonville was up at the time. Philadelphia was losing.
That's right. I know. I'm just trying to make sure that I do know that.
What I'm saying is the clock won't necessarily.
What's stopping the Jacksonville defense from the sea parting And sure, he could go down. With
okay, the, well, that's a different story. That's a significant.
You know what I mean? See, sure, he could, but that's what I'm saying. That's how this new yes. type of onside okay. kick would set things up.
Okay, then you could do that, and then let them score, and that play would probably take another 2 to 3 seconds off the clock, and you could probably legitimately get a ball back with a kickoff at 50 seconds. Yes, I could see that.
Yeah.
I could definitely see that.
I don't see it really being implemented by head coaches, but maybe it's an option. I mean, it's
– Well, you know what?
I think it's an interesting option, especially near the end of the game.
I have seen that done, and you know what? Maybe that's another – It's so hard to like sit there and think 55 seconds.
I know.
And let them score and go up by probably 6, maybe 7, or not probably. Let them go up 6, probably 7,
maybe 8. And maybe 8.
Well, they were down. Yeah, maybe 8. I don't think in that situation you go for 2 though. I think you go by if you were filled up, you would go for the extra point to make it 7 mm-hmm. and put the pressure on them. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, yeah, you take that scenario, and yeah, I mean that. To be honest, if Lanzi had done that, even if it hadn't worked out, it really would change the dialogue of what people are talking about.
And it's true, and I understand we're getting away from what actually happened. It's just, just that, you know, I think it's the fact that he had only 2 timeouts left, and he kind of knew that Philadelphia, you know, kick it long, make them win it.
Yeah, I think that's just kind of the.
Not a gimme. It's not a gimme.
No, it's not.
Maybe if he had one extra, I don't know. I said maybe think I'm curious to know if a head coach would be willing to do that type of thing. I really am.
And you know what? I think here's the next step in that thought process is he was on the road, and if he's going to do that where he does that squib, make sure no more than 1 second goes off the clock, and then let them run it in. Mm-hmm. And maybe push
you have to get them to come in. That's the thing.
Yeah, push them through or tackle them from behind and pick them up and drive them forward 4 yards, whatever it takes. If a head coach would be more likely to do that on the road than at home. I don't think most fans understand or grasp all the little nuances there in how you can create or decrease your odds of success or probabilities of presenting a situation in which you can increase your odds of winning. And to be quite honest, there's a lot of AFL people in front offices and coaches that don't see it that way. And it's a fun exercise for us to talk about. And I know there's other people and other fans that listen or that contribute on the boards at Arena Fan that would agree in that you want to do what you can to maximize your efforts to win mm-hmm. with the last possession at the end of the game. But what's, I think, really interesting, a good counterpoint to that is, everyone on the boards has these nicknames, and so I forget real names sometimes because you always think about the nicknames. He used to be the former PR guy out in Spokane, and he contributes infographics for Arena Fan.
Brian Beaudry.
Beaudry, yeah. He had an interesting point. I don't think he actually published this, but he did a study on teams with the last possession and what actually occurred as far as winning a game. And it wasn't quite where a lot of us thought it might be. Now, that being said, I think the biggest telltale with that is how much time a team actually has left on the clock.
Right.
Whether it's 13 seconds and they're at their own 2-yard line, or it's 53 seconds in this scenario and you probably at your own 5-yard line, but that's a significantly greater amount of time.
Right.
So to kind of add a counterpoint to that argument, but no, I would agree. I wouldn't have had qualms if Lanzi had done some squib kick in the wall at the 3-yard line, give him the ball right there, and have him go in and score. Even if they kick the extra point, they're down by 6. You know what? You're right. I take that back. If in that situation, I think you feel you go for 2 because you want to make it to 7. Because if you miss the extra point, you're at 6, and a touchdown beats you. And then so yeah, I think you do go for 2 there. But nonetheless, it would have given the Sharks that final drive, mm-hmm. and they still had two timeouts in which they could have utilized those two timeouts. Right. But once, and they would have done it properly because Philly still had their three timeouts.
No, it's true. And I know we've gone somewhat off the rail with this one, but
we did.
I'll make the point that, you know, either way, Money Reynolds, 4 seconds left. What a catch. I mean, they did what they needed to do. Philadelphia advances to the Arena Bowl for the third time in
5 years.
Yeah, something. Yeah,
that's you got to give kudos, Philly, how they did handle that end of the game and working the clock down to that situation to really put them in the ultimate success. Now, where there was no time left.
Now, some people have said, sound like Donald Trump there by putting it that way. I've seen some people say on the boards, how about that, that the way that it was celebrated by Philadelphia, was it a sign of things to come? And, you know, oh, okay, you know, you get – I think of it as this. Okay, yes, it's nothing on Coach Guy. It's nothing on Coach Dozell at all. They wanted to celebrate – Philadelphia wanted to celebrate in their own way. They're going to the championship. It's the same thing would it be Major League Baseball or whether it be hockey in the NHL. You go to the next round, you know, especially if you're going to, you know, the League Championship Series or you're going to the World Series or to the Stanley Cup Finals, whatever, you want to celebrate.
So what you're saying is we celebrate what we just did, but we take it one game at a time, and once we're done, we're on to the next game.
You have to. You know, you're done, you celebrate, you do your celebrating, you get it done, but then the work begins. All over again.
You know what? This might be a philosophical thing. I disagree. I think you are happy and you're excited to have won that game, but I think there's something to be said about the manner in which you do it. And
is it because baseball is a championship is a 7-game series versus one game for a championship in football?
Well, if we're going to talk in that paradigm. Yeah, I would agree with your sentiment right there in that paradigm. But in strictly the football, I am not of the school. I'm of the school of thought that when you win your championship game, your conference championship game to put you in the championship or whatever, the semifinal game or however you want to call it.
Right.
You win the contest to put you in the championship game. There is a certain amount of celebration and happiness that you have. But at the same time, if your mission is and final goal is that winning that championship game, mm-hmm. there's a part of you that knows we're not there yet. We're not done yet. We got more work to do.
Yeah, but I think it's mindset.
We can pause on that and we can have some fun, but I'm of the mindset, screw the pause, man. That was nice. We won that game. I'll think back on that from years to come that we played in that game. It was a fun game. I'm getting ready for the next game. And I think that's just more – personality differences amongst people, mm-hmm. to be honest. I'm not going to listen. I just argued with you about it, but I honestly don't care. I mean, I get what you're saying. You know, you got to think about it.
I didn't have a problem with it.
You got all these guys on one team. You think everybody feels exactly the same way? No. And even as great as Coach Guy might be in trying to get his guys to all feel the same way, like, we beat Cleveland, screw it, we're going on to Philly, or, well, at that time they didn't know, but no, man, some of those guys thought that was awesome, phenomenal, we're going to the Arena Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, do I have a problem with it? No, but if you told me I had to pick one or the other, okay. I would disagree with you.
Okay. Great crowd, even though it was a crowd of about 4,700 in Allentown. Allentown is a smaller arena. From what I saw on television, that place was rocking. That place was rocking. Kudos to Philadelphia Soul fans, and I hope you guys make it out to Glendale for the game in about 10 days' time. So, again, we're not making our picks. That's going to be held off for our show next week, for our Arena Bowl special next week. But we wanted to talk about real quickly about the awards that came up past couple of days, because if you've been following with the league schedule, we've had ones ever since the league announced the all arena teams on Saturday during that special that was on CBS Sports Network. And then we're going to do something different afterwards to finish off the show. Let's quickly go over the what do you think about Tommy Frevert
Kicker of the year.
Well deserved. Now, he becomes only the second kicker in league history to win it back to back. Who was the first? I asked you this earlier.
Yeah, so in all truth. So
I sort of gave it away. You got it wrong.
I got it wrong when you asked me the first time, but it's Remy Hamilton.
Yeah, it's Remy Hamilton.
For some reason, I was thinking Haglund with San Jose.
Yeah, and what's funny is that there's never been a kicker in league history to win it in more than one season. You know, or win it twice. But Frevert and Hamilton are it. Well deserved. I know where. I mean, sure, anything could have been said for Mark Lewis.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Tommy earned it,
but I would not have been disappointed or thought, oh, Tommy got screwed if they had gone with Lewis.
I mean,
I thought Lewis was deserving as well, but I think Tommy's to win.
What about, I'm going to front page here.
Rookie of the year. Okay, this one's interesting to me. I agree, and I think it was Ross.
Or Marvin Ross, by the way, anybody hadn't seen it.
Cleveland. Yeah. The early front runner would have been his teammate, Joe Powell. And I think the knock why Ross got the advantage was Powell didn't play enough games. He missed a lot of games.
Okay.
Being in camp, being injured, NFL camp, Ross was there throughout the whole season. And I would wager that if we were to ask who was second, it probably was Joe Powell.
Okay.
Now, they're a dynamic tandem this year.
Again, if I had a choice, I would have chosen Ross also. Again, I'd mentioned before that I felt that
Pete Smith,
yeah, from LA, would have been a decent choice as a Rookie of the Year too. But I mean, we haven't had a quarterback win Rookie of the Year since Brett Dietz in 2007. So.
And in that season, he didn't play the whole year either.
Mind you, in 2007, there were two.
No, and that must have been some really good PR work that year.
Yeah, there were two of them that year. So the other one, which was announced today, was the Offensive and Defensive Lineman of the Year. The offensive lineman went to Jordan Mudge of Arizona. Defensive lineman went to Jake Metz of the Philadelphia Soul.
I think no surprise with Jake Metz. I'd be surprised if he didn't garner at least 50% of the vote, with the other 50% scattered amongst a bunch of names. Mudge, I personally didn't have him number one, but I can't argue with it. He had a really great season. And to admit something, the hardest position for me to grade personally is the offensive line. And, you know, he was up there in my finalist group. So, great for him, and great for Arizona, and great for Philadelphia. And I'm sensing kind of a theme here going, though, with that.
what about Jordan Mudge of Arizona getting the offensive lineman of the year?
Oh, well, that's what I was talking about.
Oh, you mean about the team? Oh, teams by Philly, Arizona.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And him being from Arizona, and Metz from Philadelphia. I think the neat thing for Metz personally is his versatility. He really didn't line up at the left end or just the right end. He took snaps at nose. He took snaps at the linebacker position. He was really versatile in his approach. And for Mudge, my takeaway with him is they had quite a few guys kind of rotate through that year through the offensive line this year because of injuries. And he really was the consistent person there. And that's huge. And that's a major part of their success, because Nick Davila, when he's safe and he feels comfortable, he performs at the highest level. Mm-hmm. And having Mudge there and the job he did this year allowed that to be a possibility and to actually happen.
Okay. No, I think for me, I think they were pretty dead on. I'd have to go through my list to see where I had everybody.
I really had Metz kind of above all the other defensive linemen for the season. As far as offensive linemen, I kind of had three guys in the top three, and I didn't have a lot of differentiation between the three of them myself personally, and Mudge being one of them in there. So I think it's a great honor for him, and kudos to him.
Real quickly, we'll talk about the first team All Arena, then we'll just look at the second team. There it is. For the offensive, All Arena offensive, anything that really stood out in your mind?
Well, stand out, but probably for different reasons. First team fullback. We don't see Derek Ross.
Yeah, for the first time in...
Now, I don't disagree with not seeing Derek Ross this season.
I would have had him as a second team. I think the choices were a little bit switched here. I think I had Jeremy Richardson as first team.
Yeah, but I think that's what kind of stuck out there. As far as quarterback, you know what? I'm on record as saying I thought Nick and Dan were the top two, but my edge this year went to Nick. Mm-hmm.
My second team choice, I knew it wasn't even going to be, you know, me putting, you know, my thought of Randy Hippard for second team. he was probably the only vote gotten was from me.
Might be. offensive line. Yeah. I mean, to be quite honest, not a single of the seven, because there was a tie at center for first team, really surprised me at all. It was just a matter of a difference between first and second team for me.
Right.
On some of those guys.
Wide receivers for me were dead on. Those are the three that I had, Hills, yeah. Windsor, and Tompkins. Same thing with kicker and Freebert. I can't remember who I had as my quarterback. I think it was Davila. I don't remember.
Yeah,
it was.
One thing I did notice, I really liked we don't know where the final voting was, but
no.
I bet Moquette Ruffins from Jacksonville was high up there in the votes for offensive line, whether first or second team. To me, he could have earned a spot on at least second team. And then at wide receiver, like I agree with you, the first team did. I thought those three were no brainers, and then second team. At wide receiver, I think the big one was, personally, I would have had from Philadelphia money at the third wide receiver spot over Taylor. But once again, that's really, this is a fine pick, a good pick.
I agree. I think I had Darius Reynolds up there too. I don't know if I remember correctly, but.
I don't think you can knock it. Colin was a big, huge part of that offense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, no, you can't knock it.
I think the coaches and the staff members that voted and the media that voted this year did a really solid job in picking the first and second team All-Arena players. I like I said, and arguments could be made, but if there's one guy that's two guys that you want to make arguments for, you know, you can make an argument for Derek Ross, and
yeah, that's one of the few ones I'm not.
Moquette Ruffins, and you know,
here, Derek Ross, you make third team All Arena.
And actually, besides Darius Reynolds, there's probably one or two other receivers that you could have slid into that position as well. This is a very solid team.
Any comments at all about defense? First team, second team?
Oh yeah, let's talk about that as well. Let me pull that up, take a look at it, make sure I don't make mistakes.
Brandon Tompkins, I think, no-brainer for kick return. Larry Beavers, kick return, second team, I think it's really a no-brainer too.
Yeah, you know, I think really I might have had a couple of the guys on first team and second team. When I was looking at these things at the end of the season and kind of mulling things over in my mind how I might view things – one of the to me, the thing I want to point out is Dexter Jackson, second team.
You want to point that out? I want to point out our rookie of the year got second team and not first team.
which
I think we talked about before. I don't remember if it was on air or not, but we talked about this before, about little quirks.
Yeah, little quirks. I didn't think D-Jax was top two throughout the season. And then I started looking into where other guys were at those position at that position particularly, and you know he put some numbers up this year. I can't, after looking at it and going back through, I don't think he made, despite the numbers, I don't think he made as many impact plays that I think the person I would have put it there would have. But I do think he didn't make as many negative plays once I went back and looked. He's relentless, and he, if you took him off that Jacksonville front four, they would have had much greater problems this season.
Yeah.
You know, going back and looking at it again. So well deserved for Dexter. And then defensive back, I thought, you know, Dwayne Hollis, there could have been an argument for him first team, but he's deserving of all arena regardless. Marvin Ross, like you said, the one guy I had Frederick in my kind of top eight, but I didn't have him in my top six. But that's not a knock. That's just, I thought maybe one or two other guys could have been in that position. Pretty much the same conversation being had in that six wide receiver spot on offense. There was a couple guys that really kind of fit there, but he had a great season for Los Angeles and really made an impact in the second half of the season for that defense.
Yeah, again, I think my only thing again was my only quirk I think was again Ross. But other than that, I think it was okay. I wasn't nothing really stood out to me that much that I would have to complain about. So kudos everybody who's won. We got the big ones coming up this week. Some of the big ones up for the rest of this week, and then the big ones right before the Arena Bowl. So keep up to date with us here at arenafan.com, our social media, for all the announcements.
And Tim posted the award schedule on the website as well if you want to see what awards are coming up on which days.
Yes. We want to try something different to finish off the show. I don't know how this is going to go, but I think we're going to try this. You had suggested this last week, and I said, you know, let's give it a try, see how it goes. Now, sure, we're a week before Arena Bowl, but yet it's going to be a very interesting off season. Not only do we have free agency, but we also have an expansion draft coming up, which we don't know how the rules are going to be set as of yet. But we kind of wanted to look at free age about, if I guess, how are we going to put this? Free agency going into 2017, is that what we're trying to look at specifically, or is that?
Yeah, I guess what guys may be available, what guys are returning, just kind of, you know, where your team heads into this off season.
Yeah.
And I think one other thing to note is kind of a different experience this year is the impact AFL China will have.
Huge.
And for me, I look at it a little differently than you. I look at it as the guys that get over there and may or may not get injured.
Yeah. There are many variables. One of the other variables that I said to you is that depending on who gets hired for the Tampa Bay job, that could be huge ramifications too. Let's say if it is somebody who is on the coaching staff or players that go over there, free agency, if they get hurt, you know, DC still throws a wrench into this thing too. But either way, I think if we were to look at, and should we center on, do you want to center on just how do you want to do this? Center on.
Let's do this breakdown first.
Okay.
Real quick breakdown. Arizona, first of all, rookie contracts.
Yes.
Teams hold an option, automatic option.
Yes.
And then you have your veteran free agents.
And by the way, if anybody remembers, when they see during the offseason what is the terminology that is used for, is it rookie contract picked up, a rookie contract? I'm trying to remember the term. It's escaped me here. When they sign, they pick up the option, the rookie option.
Yeah. And so on rookie contracts, it's a one-year contract with a team option for the second.
That's it, yes.
And then you have your veterans. Now, if a vet is to be a free agent but they're on injured reserve, before they enter free agency, they have to clear and be medically cleared first. So there's that caveat. One of the things we decided not to include was players on other league exempt, refused to report, and suspended, because there's just so many different nuances to each of those designations. You don't know the full scenario and what the impact is.
Right. Exactly.
So these numbers, we'll say, are rough numbers. So Arizona,
yeah, okay,
has 16 guys that could be coming back. They have 6 rookie contracts, 3 of them are active, and 3 of them are on injured reserve. And then they have 10 veteran contracts, 8 of which are active and 2 on injured reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland is tied for the second highest number of potential returnees at 18. They have 12 rookie contracts that they can extend and 6 returning guys under contract. I know I started alphabetical order, but I'll go to the next team with 18, and that's the LA Kiss.
Okay.
There's 13 rookie contracts. 10 of them are on active roster, and 3 of them are injured reserve right now, and you have 5 veterans. Next up was Jacksonville with 7 rookie contracts, 5 active, 2 injured reserve, and 8 returnees. Orlando is at 14. They have 10 rookie contracts. 5 of those rookies are on active, and 5 are on injured reserve. And then they have 4 veterans under contract. Philadelphia is tied with Portland for the least guys possible to return. They have 3 rookies they hold options on, and 6 veterans, 5 of which are on the active and 1 on the inactive reserve. And then Portland, we'll see what happens there. But for sakes of right now, 4 rookies, 2 active, 2 injured reserve, 5 vets, 3 active, 2 injured reserve. And then in Tampa, a total of 10, 6 rookies and 4 vets.
Okay. So
what that does is leaves a lot of names that we know and that are impact players available as free agents. Now, as we all know,
and that's, I think it's one of the things I think we should center on, and maybe we can give impact players, stars, yeah, superstars that are going to be
potentially available, because we have,
yes,
to remember,
yeah,
each team will have an exclusive period in which they can try to re-sign players that were on their roster this past season,
right,
before they enter free agency.
And I'm thinking, let's center on some of the big, a lot of teams.
You want to go team by team, or
well, I don't know if we should
easier.
Do we need to go through all of them? I mean, just go
not all of them, but maybe if we go team by team, we can go 1 or 2 players each.
I think so too. Well, I think one of the big ones that I think we need to that we'll start with, even alphabetically, is Arizona. Just the amount of players that are on that team that are going to be available for free agency next year is staggering. And they're huge, yeah, names.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have Davila coming off a 3-year contract he signed in 2014. Michael Benson, first-team All-Arena. He had a 2-year contract for 2015. So you're looking at 2 guys lining up right behind center, first-team All-Arena guys. Now, yeah.
It gets better. Mo Purify?
Yes. Luis Vasquez.
Mm-hmm.
Antage Hawthorne.
Mm-hmm. And nothing against the 3 kickers. They have all 3 of their kickers, by the way, that are going to be available. Zendejas, Spencer, if he can
Pertweet.
Yeah, and Nick Pertweet. There are some, there are some big names on this Arizona franchise.
But I would fully expect most of these guys, if they want to keep playing, they're going to stay here. Mm-hmm. Why would you leave the situation you're in?
Unless there's the opportunity when it becomes to, for Washington, starting a new
yeah,
franchise.
And that throws a completely different wrench in how the expansion draft will occur.
Yeah.
And we can talk about that for a minute or two after this. But, Arizona has some significant free agents, but they also have I'm looking at the returning guys. Glasper, free,
yeah,
agent.
Yeah.
Kellum back. And let's see, Phillips. Demetrio Tyson. So they, Rod Windsor. So they've got key components under contract. So for you Rattlers fans, after the Arena Bowl and you start thinking what's going to go on, well, here's some things to start thinking about as far as which players will be back and which ones they got to go talk to and say, hey, let's continue this ride. Let's try and go for one more.
Let's look at Jacksonville just as the next one, because this is one, another one that stands out when it comes to very well-known names. Reggie Gray, Joe Hills.
Yeah, I think that's the most interesting thing is
David
that
David Hyland.
Yeah, David Hyland, Dexter Jackson, mm-hmm.
Tiger Jones.
Tiger Jones. Let's see the who else? Kareem Smith. Mm-hmm. Really didn't have quite the year I thought he'd have. Spider Man. Greg Reed,
by the way.
Yeah. So
we have to include him, even though he is on IR.
What they do have returning, though. As far as the bigger names are, Tommy Grady,
yeah,
Cornelius Lewis,
yeah,
the center Raymond McNeil,
Derek Ross,
LaRoche Jackson,
mm-hmm. Alvin Ray Jackson,
his brother from another mother, and Moquette Ruffin. So
they have some pretty significant players that are currently under contract. So you compare the two so far, it doesn't seem so bad between Arizona and Jacksonville.
No, but I think to me the biggest what you have here is maybe because of the way their season went is that group of wide receivers and what they decide they want to do. Mm-hmm. And if they keep Bob Lanzi on, I'm thinking they will, but we don't know that yet.
No.
How did they jive with him these last couple of weeks, and is that something they see as a fit? So I think that wide receiving core for Jacksonville is something for Jacksonville fans to kind of key in on the during that exclusive period for the teams to re-sign their own players.
Right, exactly. And then if we go to Cleveland as an example, Philip Keith Manley, Arvell Nelson is a big one because they have to decide what they're going to do with the quarterback situation next year. Are they going to pick up another free agent, or are they going to leave? Is it going to be Nelson, or is it going to be Panasuk?
Well, they have the option of Panasuk. What's really interesting for Cleveland is they have 12 rookies they have the option of bringing back.
Right.
The only thing that has more is the LA Kiss.
Right. And so, yeah, Colin Taylor, too. Colin Taylor's a big name.
Yeah. So when they talked about during the broadcast Arizona against Cleveland, mm-hmm. When they were talking about Cleveland being a young team, they really were. When you start to look at a lot of their contributors,
yeah.
Especially in the defensive backfield led by Joe Powell and Marvin Ross.
Yeah. Philadelphia Soul. Wow. You mentioned it before. This is nuts. This is nuts. Richard Cleaver, Luke Collins, Tommy Freeford, Dwayne Hollis, Teddy Jennings, SK, Jake Metz. Lonnie Outlaw, Money Reynolds,
Tracy Belton,
Jeremy Richardson,
Adam Smith,
Neil Tevis, Wayne Tribu.
they have some work to do.
Yes, they do.
And I sense these guys and their situation they have and what they have going on,
mm-hmm.
is more like an Arizona situation where if I was a fan of this team, I'd feel comfortable. We're going to find some way to get something done with these guys versus where I think if I'm a Jacksonville Shark fan, I'm really concerned about what we're going to do with our wide receivers.
LA Kiss. Cleveland Thomas, I think, is one of the names that stands out. I mean, he's already been voted into the
elected.
Yeah, sorry, elected. Thank you. Elected, but it still has to be what were the rules again? Two seasons, three seasons inactive? Mm-hmm. I can't remember. I think it's three seasons.
Three seasons, yes.
Some stand out, but some don't. I mean, you got a Rashawn Kaiser. He's on IR right now. Amari Jackson.
Well, I think the big thing for them is they have both quarterbacks under contract for next season.
Yep. Yeah. And one variable which we didn't put into here is Donovan Morgan will not return.
Yes, he will retire.
Yeah.
But he would have been free agent anyways. So.
Okay.
And then their defense line, Derek Summers and Caesar Rayford under contract come back next season.
Mm-hmm.
And wide receiver-wise, Fred Williams. So they have some nice solid pieces there to start the building blocks for next season.
Yeah. Orlando Predators, after coming off a very strong season, record-setting wins, their kicker, Mark Lewis, Lamarck Brown, I'm trying to see here, Terrence Taylor, Brandon Tompkins, that's a big one.
That's a huge one, and their Jack linebacker Terrence Moore.
Yeah, C.J. Cobb also, even though he's on IR at the moment.
Varmasani, free agent.
Yeah, Daryl Cato Bishop. He was on inactive, but still.
So yeah, and then
they still got BMO. I guess it determines on what's going to happen with the quarterback situation also for them.
Well, they have both Bernard Morris and Randy Hippard under contract for next year, along with Greg Carr.
Right.
And not only that, they had the rookie options on the McRae twins.
That's true.
And so there's building blocks. And if you were in Orlando this season, you say, hey, we had a lot of success this season. We had a really good season. That playoff game wasn't representative of what we thought or think we could have done or where we could have gone.
Right, right.
So I think for them, it's more about that defensive backfield, and which was a strength for them this season. They didn't quite get the pressure up front that I think they thought they were going to get.
Uh-huh.
But that back four definitely played well fairly consistently throughout the season. So if I'm an Orlando Predator fan, I think that the thing I'm looking at and asking is how are we gonna do with this defense here? How are we gonna maintain and you know what we had on defense and maybe find a way to upgrade here or there?
Portland Steel, I think big name Shane Austin, Tom Gilson. He's made a name for himself now as a wide receiver. Ernesto Lakeo. Bryce Piella.
Mm. I think he's going to be a big target for some teams this offseason. Mm-hmm. I don't know the situation if he wants to try to stay on the West Coast or not, but yeah. I would expect teams to try and go after him.
Casey Obey. I don't know. To be fair, I don't know. I know names, but I don't know that many. I mean, are they going to, you know, if Portland returns, will it be with Shane Austin under center? Or I guess we'll have to see what's going to happen.
Well, I guess the other way to look at it is, mm-hmm. What do they have coming back?
Right.
And really, it boils down to Shane Boyle and Jamar Howard.
Right.
And if you want to, Rashad Carter.
Right.
Where he's at the wide receiver position, I think with what's available out there, you have room to work. It's not a lot returning, and you know that's a situation that on a different level we'll have to monitor in the offseason.
And last but not least, the Tampa Bay Storm. And I said this is the team I think that has the most variables against them, not only roster wise but also coaching staff wise. What direction will this team take?
It's going to completely depend on who the head coach is and how he jives with the front office. They have four veterans returning, and if you want to pick the two biggies, it's James Gordon at Mac linebacker and Cortez Stubbs at defensive back.
You wouldn't throw Jason Boltis in there, even though he was...
No, from what I understand, he's going to retire at the end of the season.
Okay.
And regardless, he was on a two-year from 2015, so he's a free agent at the end of the season.
Okay, They would play.
I don't know. He may change his mind.
I mean, they would keep Kendrick Ings. This is a guy who went to
Kendrick. Okay, when we talk about that, you're talking about the six rookies that they have options on, and one of them is Kendrick Ings. And people might wonder, didn't Kendrick play last year? He did, but when he went to the CFL, the CBA, and I think Article 13 states, the player's contract is told.
Okay.
And then so when he came back, it restarted.
Okay.
So
makes sense.
Hence, they would still have the option here with Kendrick.
Same thing. Pre-Shea, TT.
All free agents.
So many on an injured reserve. Gerald Young.
Oh, yeah. Everybody on their injured reserve is a free
agent. I don't know which way they can go with this. This again, I think that this team, I think, is probably the most in limbo, in my opinion, because of just what's going to happen this offseason.
Yeah, totally going to depend on who the head coach is and their ability to get players in and their ability to work with the front office and,
exactly,
and the arrangement and how they want things operated or how they want things operated. Mm-hmm.
So overall, I think it's an interesting look on what your team may or may not look like next year, who may be available on the free agent market. And this could be a very, you know, not only with DC coming in, but it's going to be an expansion draft. But it's going to be a very interesting offseason. And we're not even there yet. We're not trying to push the offseason onto everybody. Obviously, we've got the Arena Bowl coming up next week. We're not trying to push it, but just want to give you a quick peek of what could be to come. Again, could be one of the most interesting off seasons in years past. So again, just to remind everybody, with the travel schedule and whatnot, we're going to have a late show or a later show than normal next week, most likely on Thursday. Do also not forget to keep your eye on social media for Arena Fan, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Periscope. We're going to get there. We're bringing that back. Periscope. For multitude of things to do with the festivities for Arena Bowl 29 in Phoenix slash Glendale.
Active blogging by you guys on the message boards.
That's right. Yeah, our yearly travel blog on our message boards. Do not forget that if we have any interviews or whatnot, that will be. They'll be posted on SoundCloud. If you want to revisit any of the other shows from the year, do not forget, you can also check out iTunes and Google Play Music. So Arena Bowl is coming up. No, we're not giving our picks. That will be on our next show. But we are looking forward to it, aren't we, Jim? And we should be. I'm hoping it's going to be a very good game, but we'll talk about it more next week. So we'll see you guys next week. Safe travels to anybody and any fans who are coming to the game. We hope to see you there. If you want to shout out to us, you know how to do so, especially me. If you want to email me at tim.capper@arenafan.com, or if you want on Twitter, I'm at Repact, REPPACT. Just let me know you're coming. Maybe we can meet up and do an unofficial impromptu get together. So for everybody here at AFL Tonight, for Jim Robinson, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.
Deuces.